This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Nine, 12, 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Deep State Radio. I'm your host, David Rothkopf, coming to you from New York City, coming to you from our nation's capital, as she is with us every Thursday, is Dr. Kavita Patel, who is of a lot of places. She's a doctor, practicing physician. She's with Brookings. She was in the Obama administration. How are you doing today, Kavita?
I'm shockingly well for me.
Wow. That is shockingly well for you. And I'm delighted to hear that.
It is.
And we're joined today also by an old friend here, Harry Littman, a former U.S. attorney, former deputy assistant attorney general. He's the creator and executive producer of the Talking Feds podcast, an excellent podcast if you have to listen to two. and you should. He's a LA Times legal columnist. He's a regular commentator on MSNBC, on CNN, on Fox, for DC Comics. No, I made up that last part. And he is an active litigator and teaches constitutional law and national security. Both you guys are busy a lot. Hi, Harry. Are you in California?
I am. I'm in La Jolla, the jewel, a little bit north of San Diego. All is well here.
If I could pick one place to be in the United States, it would be La Jolla, California.
You can.
Really? What could I do there?
Yeah. What do you mean? Exactly. I didn't come here for the work. Came here for the water. But now, you know, you cobble up some kind of job together, it'll work out.
Do you spend your morning surfing or something?
My wife does. So the very quick story is she didn't want to move here for all the normal reasons, wealth and beauty, obsession and stuff. And she gave it a shot. And now, 5 years later, the first thing she does when she gets up is check the waves report. And she and my 13-year-old go daily.
That's one of those things people always say, you know. Yeah, no, I didn't want to move there because it's too beautiful. The people have too much money and they're too obsessed right. with how beautiful they are.
Exactly.
It's the way it was when I was growing up in New Jersey. That's exactly what we would say.
I know, just the same.
Look, I want to talk about a bunch of things. There's a lot to talk about sort of from both of your specialties. I'm going to throw you a bit of a curveball here, Harry, because I want to start with one that's outside the legal realm. But today we passed 200 million vaccinations in the United States in something like 93 days of the Biden administration. When the Biden administration started, we were lagging the world in all this stuff. And now here we are. Just about 3 months later, and we are one of the world leaders. And, you know, other countries are going, I wish we were like the United States, the Europeans, or I wish we were, or Canada, if only we could do it like the US. It's an amazing feat. And I think we take it for granted, but it's an amazing feat, you know, and people talk about first 100 days and, you know, in the FDR's first 100 days, he did a whole bunch of things. There were only 135 million people in the United States when FDR was the president of the United States. Doing something of this logistical scale, you know, he created some remarkable programs that employed several million people. Doing something of this logistical scale is just mind-boggling. And I just don't want to let it sort of slide. I just want to note it. And so I want to get both of your reactions to it, whatever they are, and then we'll turn our attentions to some of the other things, including the trial in Minnesota this week. But
yeah, so a few things, a duly noted, but it's really true. First, tip of the hat to Ron Klain, chief of staff there. You know, he cut his teeth as Ebola czar, and he was really the ideal person to be trying to run this. And he has been, you know, point person and has done a phenomenal job. But people are noting it. The podcast, you know, Talking Feds, we had a foreign affairs episode out currently with Fiona Hill, who's amazing, by the way, and David Frum, Evan McMullen. And their point was that the achievements in foreign affairs are propelled by the success here. That is, it's been around the world a game changer for the U.S. in overall prestige and reputation to all of a sudden be out front from so far, you know, lagging behind exactly on the vaccine. And the third point I'll make, I don't know if Nina wanted to discuss this, but is this weird phenomenon of these continuing vaccine, you know, recalcitrants or deniers. I stepped into a minefield that I didn't know was there with a group of them when I tweeted briefly about a vaccine passport. But, you know, you still have up to 50% of Republican males say they don't want to be vaccinated. And so these numbers are more impressive in the face of that, you know, headwind against them and people who are actually resisting getting the vaccine for whatever bizarre reason.
Yeah, no, it's all great points. Kavita, what's your reaction to this?
Yeah, I think it is incredible. And look, we're getting close to, I didn't even think President Biden as accomplished as he is, as amazing as his team is. I thought that doing 100 million by 100 days, which we're just short of still, was over promising. I wanted him to kind of under promise and over deliver. And boy, has he over delivered in all regards. And I'll just take it a level below. Ron Klain deserves a lot of attention. I'm going to go just a couple of levels below and say that, you know, it's people like Tim Manning, who nobody really knows, but yeah, he's kind of in charge of raw goods and supplies and supply chain. I mean, when the Biden folks took over, it was things like ampules and vials and the bags in which the kind of vaccine particles are handled. That was what was going to slow down like Pfizer, Moderna, and all of them from producing vaccine. And so it took somebody who nobody knows and won't ever kind of get the recognition, but he literally came in, assessed, and took the DPA, which Trump actually had invoked but didn't do anything with, and then took it a step further and used the DPA to get those raw materials done. So I think I do think, David, just to offer a little bit of, having been a Fed, to offer a little bit of an asterisk, that all goes away if in 6 months the entire world is still spinning like India is today, and we don't play a role in kind of being supportive. And all you have to do is look at like little Greta Thunberg, who like basically just tore a new asshole into all the countries, including the United States.
Oh, we're allowed to say tore a new asshole?
Oh, am I not allowed to say
that? Oh, no, it's great. Okay.
In Kavita's contract, she's supposed to say that once.
It's a superb expression. But I interrupted. I actually had a quick question for you, Kavita, which is, does the Johnson & Johnson hiccup effect, you know, is it significant in these overall numbers?
It's not significant in the overall numbers. It's going to be a problem in kind of when you drill down and look at the last mile, kind of the populations that are just hard to get to for a variety of different reasons.
Right.
It is going to play a role. I do expect, as we're taping this, we're a day away from the CDC's advisory group kind of quote reviewing the pause. I suspect even if the pause should get lifted with maybe some caveats around who should get the vaccine, I think it's going to still pose an overhang. And I'll just give you one anecdotal example from, I had about 20% of my patients who were scheduled for J&J refused to get rescheduled. When I spent a lot of time and probed into deeper why they don't want to, they're like, it was interesting. They're not MAGA people. These are just regular people who actually do want to get vaccinated. But they said, well, you told me 6 cases isn't a lot, but they paused it. Don't you think they're hiding something from us and there's something worse? Mm-hmm. So we should just wait and see what happens in a couple of months and then I'll get the vaccine. So I think that's what we're going to face.
Yeah. By the way, everybody, Kavita touched on something important there, which perhaps we'll discuss in some future episode. But India is a complete catastrophe, right? I think there were 300,000 new cases yesterday. I mean, they've been wrong about their numbers, but everything that can go wrong is going wrong. And, you could end up with new Indian strains coming here and screwing everything up. So you keep an eye on that. Anyway, I didn't want to let that slide by without being noticed. One of the reasons that we're so happy to have Harry here is that there's been a lot of legal issues in the news. I want to talk about several of them. Obviously, the first is that we had the Derek Chauvin verdict this week, which, produced, I think, to some extent, a sigh of relief because it seemed like an obvious verdict to reach. But at the same time, appropriately, I think it produced a lot of response from people saying, well, one correct decision doesn't solve the problem. There is a systemic issue out there. And that was demonstrated almost simultaneously by shooting of a African-American girl in Columbus, Ohio. The same day, there have been several incidents like this during the course of this trial. What was your reaction, Harry, to the decision? And what do you think are the things that, sort of loom in its wake?
Well, so two very different questions. I mean, the trial was just really well handled from the start by the prosecution. They had, and remember, it was initially when we first heard about the shooting, the county was going to handle it. They brought forward a criminal complaint that was a mess in six different ways. And Keith Ellison stepped in and insisted on, invoked his authority as the AG and really had a very professional operation. I worked on the Rodney King federal retrial, and that's just one example of cases in which the first trial seems blundered. These guys really were very solid, not spectacular in some ways on purpose. That is, they were understated, solid prosecutors. Of course, they had a great, they got dealt a very strong hand, and you just don't have. It's not only that there's video, which has changed the entire area profoundly, right? The initial police reports here before they knew of the video were laundered in the way that that's always been the case. But then you normally have these sorts of scrums in the heat of the moment that really could go either way. And here instead we had the 9 minutes and 29 seconds and the inexplicable, except as wicked, example of excessive force. So it was a strong hand that they played well. The defense had a weak hand that it played poorly, even given its weak hand. And 10 hours is a very short deliberation, especially for, they seem to be a conscientious jury and they moved through it quickly. It was just an indication of a clean sweep for the prosecution. So everything went the way it's supposed to go. God bless that, and got and in such a high profile case. Okay, but now, what have you done for me lately? As you're suggesting, I mean, there in some ways, I've been struck by the absence of, or at least the tempered quality of the sort of sigh of relief, and people turning immediately to the question that you've posed. In some ways, it seems to. Rather than saying, okay, we're, maybe the system is working okay and we can see what happens the next time, there's an impatience to jumpstart a kind of national response. The act in Congress is going to be renewed, and there's a lot of kind of activism on the ground. I'll just say it's a more complicated topic here. The Department of Justice was quick to come in with the pattern and practice authority that Trump and Barr had, or actually not Barr, but Sessions had gotten rid of. Merrick Garland has revived and is coming into Minnesota to do it. But there will be, I think, you know, there's this sense of the whole system being awry and really have to think about root and branch solutions. And I'm ambivalent about some of those. That is, I don't think that police departments now are by and large, you know, racist as opposed to individuals within them. The problem is they don't respond well the way Minnesota did here and really call out when their colleagues in fact go rogue. But I think that there's going to be a lot of sort of national debate about how far do we want to go now for systemic reform. I'll just leave it at that and serve it up for your views. But that we really have done a very sharp pivot to a very big national policy discussion, you know, in the day or two since the verdict came down.
Well, let me ask you a question, Kavita. You may want to ask another question of Harry also. But yeah. You're in Washington. You've been watching Washington a long time. You've worked on the Hill. You've worked in the White House. You've seen how politics works in the United States. This is kind of an interesting and case and repellent in many respects. Not the least of which is there is a video of a man committing a heinous crime for which there is no defense, for which he was convicted on three different counts, for which he may go to jail for 65 years or something like that.
Let's talk about that later. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. And the GOP messaging apparatus has decided they're going to defend this. They've decided that they're going to call this a miscarriage of justice, say that this is dangerous for America, sort of take the side of Derek Chauvin in this. And I mean, they've gone from, I didn't think I could be shocked anymore by their overt racism following Charlottesville and some of these other things. But the past couple of days in response to this have been just stunning. Are you shocked? Or
I'm not, and I'll tell you why, because I know Harry, I do want to hear, and I have questions for Harry as well, not about Chauvin, but related to Makia, you know, just to the slew of other potential cases, as you can see them lining up, Adam Toledo, et cetera. I'm not shocked, David, and I'll tell you why. My great home state of Texas, one of the few times the Texas state legislature, not known for their liberal sentiments, might actually strike down a carry bill for guns because the, you know, the brotherhood, the police, the unions do not want to support it. So imagine that if you can take down kind of expansive freedoms to carry guns in a state like Texas because of the polling. And one thing I have learned working on the Hill, all three of us know it, everything has to do with fundraising and polling and what the midterms could look like. So do not think this is about moral character for one second. This has everything to do with shoring up the base. And even at, in Texas's case, at the expense of people who are gun advocates, think about that. And so none of it surprises me one bit. In fact, I was telling a friend when the verdict came in, and I was on pins, I did kind of hold my breath, not knowing exactly what would unfold. Harry had a better assessment of it, but I remember in that moment thinking, I bet you anything McConnell and the others come out with kind of a well-versed rebuke of the verdict if it comes out against Chauvin. And it's because of the poll, it's because of what we know about what they want to support. I'm actually frankly surprised we didn't see more chatter. I guess there could be, but we don't see it on social media yet. The chatter from the kind of extreme right and in terms of like inciting violence and some of the things that we saw around January 6th. I bet you if Ryan were here or Harry, you may know, but I'm sure it's there, but I thought it would be even higher. So none of it shocks me.
The one thing I'll say in response to that, I mean, it shocked me a little because I actually thought the party line on the right was, you know, based going from Trump on down, this was a heinous murder, but people are, but we don't like Black Lives Matter. I was surprised at the response. And I don't know if you saw Tucker Carlson's response on Fox, but basically it was the only reason this happened is because not just Democrats, but activists scared the jury into thinking Minnesota would burn otherwise. It was, you know, it's a Maxine Waters issue. And I think Kavita's dead on that it has to do with an in the moment assessment of polling and where they can try to make some hay. But I was a little bit surprised that they would take this one on. But you know, I've been surprised before so much so that I shouldn't be surprised anymore.
And Harry, I'm curious. It sounds like you wanted to talk about just the verdict, and I am curious about that question regarding kind of what do you see as kind of the legal path forward. I mean, it was kind of unconscionable to me that as the verdict was being like read, that you had kind of Makia, you know, you had this like case of a 16-year-old, you know, who had a knife, who had some set of like activity and body cam footage, which I will say, at least that was released pretty swiftly. And it didn't seem like they were trying to hide it.
That's been a big change, by the way, in the last 15 years. Police departments resisted that. They're everywhere. It's also another game changer. But
how do you play that? I mean, I hate to say it, but you know, it's like Keith Ellison, who I thought had some of the best words, you know, it's not about justice, it's accountability. What is your take legally on where this goes going forward? Is this just is this like we saw with the Catholic Church? Now every police officer is going to kind of come under like murder charges, or that'll be the pressure on prosecutors. What does that look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's jurisdiction by jurisdiction, but each of these now becomes cause celebs. And there are, I think there will be pressure on local prosecutors. You know, the first episode from the week, I'm now blanking on her name, but the 25-year-old who shot Dr. Ray in the chest. That's the kind of case. I mean, they brought charges the day after. You know, now it's the case that I'm not surprised would be charged if you look at it, but it's a manslaughter charge. But that they said we're ready the next day to come forward with charges was striking me. That would not have happened, you know, a year ago. You'd say, look, you want to? She obviously would. It seemed to me fairly obvious that she wasn't intending. Now the charges are not that she did it intentionally, but it was a very quick kind of charge brought forward. So I think you will see more of these, and you know the overall record. I hadn't realized till I looked in the wake of the actual Chauvin case. There really are sort of few and far between of these convictions. I know about them from the federal side, where the success rate is a little bit is a lot higher. So there's still going to be tough cases. You're still going to face jurors who have faith in police, and unlike the Chauvin case, will have a judgment call about something that happens in split second timing, etc. And my biggest worry here is that each become a bellwether for, you know, the national the next acquittal, and there could be an acquittal, and maybe a fair acquittal will sort of bring the house down. There's so much for prosecutors. There's Minnesota is the best example. There's just so much pressure on each of these cases that go above and beyond the facts and the law and you know, what's the proper verdict. So that's just a rough situation for the justice system overall. And yeah, I do foresee a series of cases where the stakes are unduly high. It's big enough already within a community, but now there's somehow going to be stand-ins for the state of racial politics in America. That's not a good individual excessive force cases are not a good way to advance that debate.
So both of you help me out with this.
Yeah.
I'll start with Kavita and then get Harry's reaction as well. I look at this. I see this as a big issue. The vice president of the United States was the attorney general of California. She ran on addressing this issue. Many Democrats ran on addressing this issue. It is very clear that police reform is needed in the United States of America from many, many different levels, whether it has to do with qualified immunity, whether it has to do with how many police have weapons, how they use their weapons, what has to do with, you know, should the police be the ones dealing with mental illness in our society? Should they be the ones dealing with homelessness in our society? It's not all about defunding the police, but it may be about restructuring the police and so forth. The Biden administration has been very quick to move on a lot of things. They have not been quick to move on this. It would have been a very easy thing for the president of the United States to turn to the vice president and say, Madam Vice President, you are an attorney general. You are now in charge of a commission. We are going to go and look into this. We need to reform policing in America.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't done it. Now, Merrick Garland got in within a few days of becoming attorney general. He said, we're going to change the rules with regard to consent decrees, make it easier to go after some of these police cases, reverse something that was done by the Trump administration. Why? Kavita and then Harry, why isn't this happening?
I'm going to give my very brief but cynical. It was never going to happen because at the end of the day, you will not hear, you've heard President Biden say that he does not promote the idea of defunding the police. And it's because he's also looking at the very same like numbers around union support and a lot of the things that in the Democratic Party, I say this as a very proud Democrat, that we have held to be true, that even if there are clear kind of problems within policing law authorities, which have gone on since the dawn of time in different forms, feels like they're accumulating in a way that we obviously need to act on, but it is just not something that is popular. It's the reason Democrats don't go after civil trial lawyers. It's the reason we don't do medical malpractice. There are some things that become, in a way, third rails. However, I feel like that for me, a lot of the Chauvin verdict offers a peek into how it is possible to ask for accountability without seeming like you are anti fill in the blank or pro fill in the blank. And I think that's actually where you are seeing now. I would bet that that's where West Wing conversations are going. Like this is, it's why Merrick Garland can get at a podium and say what he says. It's why Harry, in kind of your thoughtful remarks, you're able to say this is something different and that is a window. But for so long, it was not something that we could cross. Why? And it's why I think you heard Brian Williams kind of step into it. You had gotten a little bit of hot water on the day that the verdict was released because he talked about how, you know, it's families of police officers that go into law enforcement. So they all kind of come up in like the same fashion. But he's not wrong. And I think that's, it's so these end up being community tropes. These end up being kind of what are considered middle-class heroes and they're held out that way, blue collar workers. And that has been what Biden and many others have campaigned on. So I don't know, David, I just don't think that it was ever going to happen. And by the way, if you're Kamala Harris, not that she was asking me, she's already been saddled with immigration. I know she's ideally suited for this, but you're giving her two of the biggest albatrosses in a way that I think is just unfair to that woman. I mean, she deserves a lot more. I actually don't think she should be handling the Northern Triangle. I think she has other things. I would rather her handle policing and prosecuting, but she's got the cards she's been dealt with, and handing her this would be to hand her a dud.
You know, Harry, same question, but you know, the question crossed my mind because of what you just said. If we don't produce major change, then every trial is going to take place once in a courtroom and once in the street, every time. And because there is so many years of so much abuse, and you know, different states are going to handle it in different ways, but we are going to be locked in this cycle unless there is some kind of systemic police reform. And if I may be allowed a, you know, brief unpaid political announcement here, there are good unions and bad unions. And as far as I can see right now in the United States, police unions are bad unions. There are a lot of guys out there promoting, you know, regressive policies in this regard, racism, all sorts of horrible stuff. Maybe it's because I live in New York, because the New York Police Union is the enemy. Mm-hmm. These guys are not helping.
Yeah, well, first, let me start there, because that is 100% the issue. You know, I myself am wary, as I think the Biden administration is, of being too quick to claim systemic racism here, there, and everywhere. But you have the near equivalent in that you have unions being so between the actual culture, the blue wall of silence, and that was a huge thing in Chauvin that was broken. But and that might have ongoing cultural impact. But besides the actual culture part, there's a legal part. It's just the unions have a hammer lock on the way the arbitrations work, and what and the effect is the old school cops, and they tend to be, by the way, the union leaders, are really smother when bad stuff happens. And there isn't a video in particular, that's where unions have eight sort of different ways to keep it from accountability from occurring. I just wanted to state that as the big issue. First, I totally agree with Kavita. This was never going to, this Biden was specifically not that kind of Democrat. And, it, you know, they were never going to be siding publicly with what looked to be like, you know, I'll just put it out there, the sort of activist side of Black Lives Matter, the real, you know, not the general side that's has gotten a lot of broad support, but I mean the real, you know, hostility toward cops that's not Biden from day one. But also, I think there's a real policy concern there that they, you know, would be. I think now they are going to, they're not leading, they're following from all that's happened. And I think, as Kavita said, there'll be things that are happening, especially at the DOJ level, but they're not sure about, you know, whether a whole kind, the sort of broader measures, we can call it defunding, but I think we all agree that's a misnomer. But the cluster of things that go with that name, whether they're all, you know, wise for communities, wise is the way to go. I think it's one thing to recognize the problem, but another to endorse, you know, particular solutions. I'll just say very quickly it's a good point in about some of the abuses when it's mental health issues, et cetera. But I've done a lot of ride along with cops, and good cops still, because they're good, A and B, but they have the ability to go in and diffuse things. They make a big difference, and I think your local social worker might not do. There's it can matter. So I'm just saying that I think part of their ambivalence is actually policy driven.
Harry, I'm actually glad. So I just want to say one of the things I'm going to do, not to put both of you on the spot, like how many of us like know cops? So like the only reason I know, I'm friends still with two detectives in San Antonio. And the only reason I am is because I grew up, David, kind of like you, Harry, I don't know. I grew up in a very poor neighborhood in San Antonio. And if you were like a male who actually like was hoping to like make it good for your family, you went into the military because San Antonio was like seven, you know, bases, or you went into the police and law enforcement. So I actually know a number of cops and they are distraught at like the number of propositions. And I don't know, Harry, if you've been monitoring, I mean, the level of kind of local demand through propositions and something to basically defund the police have really reached kind of a peak. And I've been nervous because, Harry, what I see my friends, they go into domestic abuse situations, they are able to do more than I can as a doctor, because I can never even get into those situations.
Right, everyone's screaming and you can't sort of separate the actors. So
I don't know. So how do we do it? And Harry, what do we do? What happens if I don't want to defund the police? but where do I go? How, you know, is it these propositions that are kind of pushing accountability? What is the future of what you do if you don't want to just make this kind of very unilateral?
I know. So first, I'll say two things, though, you know, it's not my expertise, but first, there really, really has been a sea change, even in the last 20 years. Cops, younger, you know, take the whole population of cops under 40, 90% of them are, you know, are really good. Cops are largely good forces in society and want to be, and there's a lot of social pressure among them not to be assholes. It's so you really have to, and the leaders ship tends to be the word, but they're the old guys who are being pushed out. So that's one. The second thing I would say is that I do think it's community by community. This is why the department is important, but there are, the question's not, there's always going to be a bad cop around. The question is how the community will respond to it. And there are the real problem that remains, but it's smaller and smaller, I really think, is departments where the culture is, racist, hostile, old school, you know, the enemy. And those, you know, have to be dealt with aggressively. And there are tools for it. And the Policing Act, by the way, has some, good things, both carrots and sticks, that are in there. But I just want to say, David, I see it, you know, this would be a whole nother show, as more a matter of bad pockets than I do as system wide. Some of the pockets, to be sure, by the way, are big cities like Chicago, as best I can tell, is still, you know, kind of funky. But cops are getting an unduly bad, there, I can get myself in trouble here, but I'll just say it. They're getting an unduly bad rap, all by and large now, I think.
Let me say a couple of things just in response to Kavita's point and to yours, Harry, and then you can respond to it. We'll probably wrap up after you guys respond to the next thing. But one, I do know some cops. I point out that Rosa Brooks, who's one of our co-hosts on Monday, has not only been a cop, but she has just written a book called Tangled Up in Blue. I don't know if you've read the book, Harry or Kravita, but
it is very good.
It's really good. And Harry, she's somebody you should have talk in your show.
That'd be great. Yeah.
You've thought about it a lot, but and also, we had Eric Swalwell on a couple of weeks ago, and Eric's father and brothers are cops.
Right.
And he was talking about his perspective on that. And I've dealt with cops, although in a variety of different ways, but I did a lot of work with the police that did sort of counter-terror intelligence in the United States, and particularly in New York City. And there are some remarkable people I really admire a great deal. When you talk about systemic change, though, one of the ways that you produce systemic change in policing is not actually within the police. If we don't invest money in mental health care in the United States, there is a problem in the street that the police end up having to clean up.
That's right.
If we don't invest in fighting homelessness in the United States, there is a problem in the streets that the police end up having to clean up. I think both of those are areas where, you know, we could do with one less F-35, right? We could do with one less fighter plane that nobody wants to fly, and spend some money treating healthcare, mental health, the same as we treat other forms of health, getting homeless people off the street, and dealing with some of the other causes of tension. Drug law reform is another area where you would change the character of policing dramatically by producing that kind of change. So some of the change has to come from without, and that includes dealing with systemic racism everywhere that you could do it. But some of it has to come from within, and the fact that it's politically hard doesn't mean, you know, in my view, that it's something that we should avoid, because I do think that to the extent to which it's not addressed, and I, you know, you can see where it's going. Texas, red states, they're going to say, we're going to elect, you know, mayors and attorney generals and sheriffs and other kinds of people who are going to take a hard line and we're going to protect you from those criminals, and we're not going to let, you know, and other states are going to take a completely different view, and we're going to have two speeds in America on this issue. And I think that's not going to help things. Anyway, Kavita, last thoughts, and then Harry's our guest, so we'll let you.
Yes, I definitely. Mine's very brief. I'll just relate this to kind of the systemic racism we see in healthcare. One observation I've made, we have plenty of research on it. We do not need, sadly, as many trials or precedents, because we just know they exist and you just have to look at COVID. But to your point, David, I would say that until we actually do have, and Harry made it, until we actually do have kind of a cleansing at the top where power is concentrated, and this includes the halls of medicine, we're probably not going to see that change from within, because what I have observed is that those who are in power only want to bring up people who have kind of very similar very similar outlooks, policies, processes in mind. And so this does not stop until we do have that kind of cleansing, and that you could insert that into systemic racism in law enforcement, healthcare, education, financial mobility, job opportunities. It doesn't matter. So it is going to take time, but it's also going to take conscious efforts to displace, candidly, probably people. And this might include, I'm going to say this as someone who's a huge Nancy Pelosi fan, I would say this goes for lawmakers as well. There was no surprise to me that after Nancy Pelosi made her, I'm going to misquote her verbal comments, that, you know, George Floyd's death finally achieved justice. And so many of us, I think, not just in Twitter, but everywhere, kind of went like, did she really say that? Like, read the room. But that kind of reflects like what I'm saying. So I'll just stop there. And I think this was one of my favorite deep state discussions. So just yeah, making a note that Ryan wasn't here, but they're not related.
Well, Harry, you know,
we've got
you here to speak for the younger generation, the rising generation.
For the kiddies. You should get, by the way, Bianca Vivian Brooks on yours. We're having her tomorrow with Jamie Raskin and Phil Rucker, because she's 25 and brilliant from New York, but that's not what you asked me. So look, I 100% agree with what you said, and it's cops' jobs to, you know, if the drug laws were changed dramatically, their practices would change dramatically. All that's true, but we're talking now about law-abiding cops. While I do think the non-law-abiding cops is a matter of more pockets, and it's more how the system responds to it, you know, I'll put that to the side. But I just want to say on this, the mental health issue, most cops have 50 times encounters that don't result in arrest, or 100 times for everyone that does. So it's true that we see terrible events where a mental health professional could have made a big difference. But be aware that at least right now, you could change this, but at least right now you have cops restoring the peace or being the first, you know, line of defense in ways that never augur and never get close to any kind of excessive force situation, where they actually are, if they're accepted in the community, they are able to do quite a lot of the sort of conduct that people think maybe mental health professionals could do better. Of course, if it comes to a violent excessive force situation, it's probably when you want the cops. But I just want to point out that our paradigm for we should change this doesn't take account of the 95% of situations where this is what they do. And by and large, you know, in a pretty decent way.
Yeah, I agree with Kavita. This has been a great discussion. It has not been great just because Ryan is gone. Ryan will come back.
We miss Ryan.
Yeah. Next week. But it has been great.
He's very soft spoken, though. I feel like I was too excitable for being in his place. I don't want him to tear me a new asshole when he's next here.
You could never be in Ryan's place. You have a place of your own, always.
Thank you.
Yeah. And also, Kavita and I bring, you know, Texas and New Jersey.
You bring Texas to Times Square.
Texas justice. Yeah, that's what we call it. So David,
Texas justice. Yeah, exactly. But in any event, it's great to have you here, Harry. And I do recommend that everybody listens to Talking Feds. I think for the most part, podcasts are a pox on America, and they should be eliminated. But I think Harry's is really, really
thank you.
There are definitely too many of them, and maybe it should just be Harry's and ours, frankly. But you know, I'll leave that to the listeners to decide. In the meantime, we've got a lot of very interesting stuff coming, a lot of great guests coming up in the weeks ahead. Go to the DSRnetwork.com to find out what's coming up. Sign up to be a member. Support what we're doing. We're moving towards more and more interactivity for our members, so more and more you will be able to participate in the discussions, ask questions, help shape where we're going with each of these discussions. I think that's one of the things that sets a podcast apart from a broadcast, and we'll be doing some other kind of innovating. So go to the DSRnetwork.com and find out what that is we are doing. Join us again here next week for each of the podcasts, including our Thursday show with Kavita and with Ryan, who will be back. Thank you very, very much, Harry. Thank you, Kavita. Thank you, everybody listening, and stay healthy, everybody. Bye-bye.